Jason Justman grew up in Farmington, Michigan, and lives in Seattle now. He graduated from Michigan State University with degrees in both computer science and telecommunications. Jason was a distinguished engineer at Sinclair Broadcast Group, One Media 3.0. He now consults internationally on ATSC 3. Jason is developing software and hardware for next-generation broadcast. His goal is to enable next-gen capabilities by leveraging the world's first open-source ATSC 3.0 software ecosystem, libATSC 3. He has experience with mobile-first content, cloud solutions, and digital ecosystems. With more than 20 years in startup environments, Jason helped deliver hardware and software systems for Disney, Toyota, Lexus, Accenture, and Fiat. In his free time, Jason runs model trains with DCC, which is Digital Command and Control. He enjoys the original Muppet Show and can quote, "It's always sunny in Philadelphia," from memory. Fun fact, Jason brought with him his One Media Mark I ATSC 3.0 phone. Please welcome Jason.
Hi there, good morning everyone. First of all, I wanted to say thank you for the hospitality for this event. Today I think is a very, very exciting day with the number of ATSC 3.0 speakers and also the people that are here representing the industry. You guys really have some of the best of the 3.0 players and individuals here. So I would definitely, if you have questions, feel free to reach out to any of us as we go forward today. So today's topic that I want to talk about is ATSC 3.0 specifically with what's called MMT and for mobility use cases. Now, this will be pretty technical, so if there are questions, feel free to interrupt me. I will go into some very, very low-level details, but hopefully in the end it'll all kind of wrap together and make a little bit more sense in the big picture of how we can converge 3.0 with mobility use cases. Oh, yep, there we go. Thanks. All right. So the premise of this is that, you know, convergence of broadcast and broadband services, you know, IP multicast is a huge, huge differentiator of ATSC 3.0 versus 1.0. But the real big question comes out in the standards and specification is the standards body ATSC has a working group called TG3, but why did they adopt two different models to stream video essence delivery? One is called Route Dash, the other is called MMT, which stands for MPEG Media Transport. So if there's two ways to do the same thing, why is it important that we understand the benefits and use cases and applications for each one of those technologies? So essentially in A331, which is the standards document that's been ratified and adopted by broadcasters and by CE devices, MMT is briefly defined, but more importantly, Route Dash leverages essentially what is Dash distribution, which is very, very common in OTT. But there's a small subtlety in the prescriptive versus informative representation in the standards that could have been cleared up a little bit here. And I added just a tiny bit of color in here, but essentially TG3 approaches the standards development from the perspective on the component level of transmission all the way up to the air chain. That's where the standards definition and ratification stops. On the other side of it, from the consumer side, that's from the CTA. They publish a set of recommended practices and adoptions for CE devices. And somewhere in the middle, they're supposed to merge in between. Now, the objective is that they merge cleanly, but that doesn't always happen. And so what I'm presenting today is some real-world use cases and research that I've done over the past couple years, understanding about what are the benefits of MMT versus what are the limitations of Route Dash. And a lot of those observations came from specifically the software-defined radio implementation in a mobile handset that that has been developed between One Media and Sankia, specifically designed to showcase the potential of mobility for next-gen services. And unfortunately, there isn't 3.0 service here, but I can pull up a previously captured emission, and I'll be able to show this later a little bit just to provide some comparison and contrast between the two experiences. Now, the confusion here, and I think where some basic clarification, and it looks like the wrong font set wasn't on this, so there, some of this is a little bit cut off at the bottom, but the big picture idea is that if a tiny bit of clarity was included into A331, specifically defining that MMT shall be used for robust live linear content transmission, including hybrid or scalable emission delivery needs, versus route dash, which should be used for preposition, episodic, or VOD content delivery, I think that would have helped to add a little bit more context into what the applicable use cases are, so the right solution is applied to the right business use case. But unfortunately, that color isn't part of the standard and specification, but it is something that I think that I'll be able to show here in a little bit more detail. So just a quick overview on MMT. How many people actually know what MMT is? How many people here have at least heard of Route Dash? Okay. So this is the other challenge, is that the details behind MMT are a ratified ISO standard, but they're based off of what's called ISO 14496-15, which is ISO BMFS standard, which is what essentially is the lowest level representation of essentially between Dash media content, between HLS media content, fragmented MP4, and in MMT. So there is some low-level crossover in how the content is packaged from the ISO BMFF standard, but essentially with MMT, there's two first-class data types. One is called the MPU, the media processing unit. Think of this as just a fragment of video, a group of pictures, or this equivalent group of audio emission that, you know, is 1 or 2 seconds long from a traditional GOP structure. Then additionally, there's what's called the signaling message, the SI message. This contains media essence information, and the way MMT defines each video audio caption stream is by something called the packet ID. Now, inside of the signaling message, it provides timing for each one of these stream emissions, other stream properties, metadata, and anything that's needed for the media rendition and essence representation on the receiver. Now, this may be a little bit hard to see, and this is one of the challenges that especially adoption of implementation from the transmission and from the CE reception side is we're talking on the bit level here now in the emission here. So on the left-hand side, it shows the representation of what the MMTP packet header looks like, and on the right-hand side, there's additional cases for, like I mentioned, the MPU and the signaling information message. So this goes back really to like a low-level computer science engineering implementation that is kind of tricky and complex, and that's why it has taken a while to get socialization and adoption, because it's not as simple as like Dash, where you're just moving a traditional MPD. You're in MMT, you're moving these lower level bit streams across. But there's a very good reason why in here. Now, specifically, the three reasons, and the third one's cut off, but features that aren't accurately described in color. The first one is robust depackagization. Second one is a media fragmentation aware transport. And on the third one, scalability capabilities. But robust depacketization and media fragmentation aware transport are incredibly critical, especially on mobility devices, because transient data unit loss or long fade, regardless of the, you know, of the robustness of the receiver and the demodulator and the antenna. Remember, the antenna is enclosed fully in a unit like this. So we're not talking about, you know, a 20 dB gain antenna panel. We're talking about a small, small wire aperture antenna that's inside of this device. Now, the trick is, though, with media fragmentation aware transport, the transport layer knows the start and the length of each sample. This is incredibly critical for playback on a mobile device, because that transient data unit loss, error concealment will help to ensure that the video playback and recovery is acceptable from an audience experience, but with Route Dash, there's a fundamental limitation. Additionally, inside of the robust depacketization, there's something called out-of-order mode. And out-of-order mode isn't well-defined, but it's implied in both of the ISO specifications and the ATSC 3 specification. And the idea with out-of-order mode is that traditionally, even with Dash or with what's called in-order mode with MMT, is you have your MPU, your media processing unit, which is like a group of frames. And in that group of frames, each one of those samples are split up into what's called the MFU. Now, that media fragmentation unit is a single essence of all video, audio, or CC, essentially just one frame of essence. But by breaking the essence emission down to a single frame representation as an MFU, it allows for robust depacketization. Now, this is where we get back into some very low-level stuff here. In ISO BMFF, which is the same fundamentals for Route Dash or MMT, it uses something called, inside of the MOOF, which is the movie fragment metadata, there's something called a Trun box. Now, this Trun box seems really easy. It contains the sample size times the sample count. So, for instance, if it's a one-second group of pictures in a 60 frame per second emission, you will see that the sample size represents each one of those samples, and in the case of MMT, MFU, over that sample duration, and then each iteration of that media essence element as it's emitted, either in Route Dash or MMT, will have something similar to this. But there's a problem that comes up here with Route Dash. Since this one box essentially is maybe a few hundred bytes of data, it is the only record and source of truth for where each one of those samples are present in relative offset into what's called the MDAT. Essentially, the MDAT is the container that has all the video essence data all slammed into one binary representation. Now, the challenge on the encoder side and the receiver side is that if I'm delivering this emission in the in-order mode, which traditionally starts up with the initialization, the MOOV, then going to the MOOF, and then going to the MDAT, and we have this Trun box, which is part of the movie fragment metadata, how can we build a list of the sample offsets without buffering the data in the encoder, right? So the trick comes in is that the reality is the implementation that is adopted in Korea and being used in the US here is what's called out-of-order mode. So the initialization, then the media essence data, and then finally at the closure of the group of pictures represents the ISO BMFF MOOF with Trun box to provide the representation for reconstitution as needed. Now, super technical, but it's backed up inside of the, essentially in the ISO 2308-1 specification in this third bullet point here, where it may be hard to read, where it says MFU mode. And the privilege of MFU mode, deciding that from a receiver decoder, is allows us to do this robust depacketization rather than having to wait, in the case of Route Dash, for the accumulation of the full object or media fragment. And the way that the trade-off on this happens is that inside of Route Dash is there is no robust depacketization of the route objects. Right, there are mitigations that can be applied and utilized, but they have a tax and they have overhead. You probably heard of something called ALFAC, Application Layer Forward Error Correction. One of the most interesting applications and use cases is applying something called Raptor Q, which is a fountain code that was developed at Qualcomm by Michael Lubby. And it's really, really impressive in what it can do for recovering lost data at the application layer, right? So we're not talking about the PHY layer. We're not talking about the baseband FEC. This is on the application layer. Now, the challenge that comes in with this is that using ALFEC has a pretty significant tax. The first tax is temporal latency. As you produce the Raptor Q ALFEC repair symbol emission, you have to have accumulation of the source symbols. And in order to leverage this as best as possible, there's documentation inside of A331 that says that a theoretical ideal temporal latency of the construction of this may be over like a window of 30 seconds, which is a pretty significant amount of latency to induce for an over-the-air live emission. But then secondarily, there's also a tax on the payload overhead. So ALFEC doesn't come for free. In some cases, a 5% additional bearer utilization for repair symbols may result in Six Sigma of confidence in object recovery, but fundamentally, it doesn't have to be perfect for the viewer experience, because we've gotten accustomed to seeing small macro blocking, small artifacts. But this leads into the second point, that without a media fragmentation aware transport, especially for live linear media essences, the receiver must receive for route dash every single packet to reconstitute the delivered emission. That means you can't have any packet loss at all if you have any hope of playing back the 1 or 2 second group of pictures. And this is lightly hinted at in the ATSC 3.0 A331 standard, but essentially it comes down to, you know, delivery objects are only handed to the application if they are complete and intact. Now, that means you have to recover every single packet in that route dash emission. And if you don't have that, you can't give it up to the media player, which in ATSC 3 is called the RMP. Now, there's one other implication that comes along with this, which is very, very hidden, is that dash doesn't support sparse media tracks. And I'll say that again, dash does not support sparse media tracks. So what is a sparse media track? A sparse media track would be essentially a video, audio, caption emission at the same boundary points as a media fragment or an MPU, where, for instance, the caption essence is missing from that point in time for that 1 second, or the audio essence is missing from that one point in time. And so what this means is you haven't fully lost the full rendition of that essence, but you've lost a component of it. If you have lost a component of it in route dash, you cannot play that back. Now, according to the standard for dash. Now, you can work around it, but the workarounds are not part of, they would violate this principle here where delivery objects are only handed up to the application if they're complete and intact. Now, MMT doesn't suffer from this because part of the signaling information provides accurate timing for each media essence via packet ID for each group of pictures, so that way the clocks can run accordingly for each one of those essences, and with robust depacketization, it can tolerate individual MFU loss and rely on error concealment from the decoder. So this may be a little bit tricky to see, but on my GitHub, I have implemented an ATSC 3.0 Wireshark protocol dissector. And what this means is that from here, I can look through each one of these packets in the MMT emission, essentially from the whole ATSC 3.0 emission, either from STLTP or from what's called a demultiplex PCAP. I can investigate each component of it, whether it's the signaling information, whether it's the media essence information, or whether it's the MPU information, and see the individual fragments. Now, like I mentioned, the timing information for each one of these media tracks is imperative to be able to support sparse reception or sparse media playback. And so inside of here, it shows the breakdown of each one of these packet IDs along with its corresponding what's called MPU sequence number, which is equivalent to like a group of pictures. And by combining those two together, then the receiver can accurately reclock and render a complete media essence or individual samples as needed in the robust depacketization use case. Going back to the ISO BMFF representation, there are three different MPU types. One is called the initialization, essentially the MOOV metadata, which just describes the essence formats and representation, and it's static for that emission essentially. So if you're delivering in 720p or 1080, this would represent what those HEVC codec parameters are. The reason that robust depacketization and media fragment aware transport works is because of this one tiny little thing. So when I first started investigating this about three and a half years ago, I spent literally a week trying to figure out why they would do this. Why did the ISO JT 20, I think it's JT 26 or whatever, why did they implement this MMTH sample and what's its purpose. Because what happens is that in the front of every media sample, there is this anonymous box of about 12 bytes. So I couldn't figure out what the point and purpose of this was until I started doing some drive testing. The trick which makes this work is that inside of this MMTH binary anonymous box that's in front of every sample is it includes the length of the sample, right? Between the information that's provided in the MMTP MPU header, which tells me how many fragments I'm expecting for this sample for reconstitution, this also tells me what that length is, so I know if I properly recovered, not just on an object level, not just on a group of pictures level, but on each individual media essence on a sample by sample level. And this allows then the ability essentially to understand the media representation at a lower level that then can be handed off to the decoder. Now, where this comes back into what we've been doing for the past 20 years with MPEG-TS is this is a very similar idea, is that because it's a transport stream, we can understand what that is, and then error concealment and robust playback can occur on devices. And we've gotten accustomed to seeing macro blocking. We've gotten accustomed to seeing audio dropouts. And by adding this MMTH sample in here for MMT, it enables us to provide a more robust experience for the decoder and for the viewing experience. So what I want to do real quick is just to show three representations here. Now, this may be a little bit tricky to understand at first, but I may go through it two or three times. But this was an example here in Seattle, in my backyard, just walking around, and it's using MMT for the media essence emission. Now, the graph on the right-hand side is a representation of the number of packets per second that the demodulator is receiving, right? So I as I'm walking around, I'm moving, the device is changing its characteristics, there's impediments, there's reflection, there's multipath interference, and so there's real-world challenges to robustly receiving this emission. Now, there's two other demos that are route dashed that I'll show you. And again, I want to ignore the mod cod, the low level, the physical RF stuff, but I want to provide just a quick preview of what that actually looks like from a robust depacketization use case. So let's see if I can. So, I don't know if it's rendering correctly on the screen, unfortunately. But what this has is a series of small interruptions in a small transient data unit loss against the on the RF reception side. And I'll just give it one more minute here. But there's a experiential problem that happens where our visual system and in our auditory system, we're able to infer continued context and representation even if there's artifacting, even if there's small transient drops in the audio track. Those are extremely important to be able to maintain the context for the viewer. And anything that interrupts that experience in what we're dealing with is a IP multicast unidirectional emission isn't like traditional OTT. Traditional OTT, if there is a underflow or an issue on the receiver with being able to process that content in real time, you'll see a buffering. But that buffering resumes you back to a temporal point in time that allows the narrative to continue. The challenge with IP multicast and the unidirectional approach in here is that we can never get that time back. So if we've lost a quarter of a second of RF data, we've lost a quarter of a second of real-time video essence data. In MMT, we're limited to our loss of our essence rendition into as short of the window is with robust depacketization versus in the route dash scenario where we lose essentially the full group of pictures, the audio, the video, and the captions rendition. And it feels like the experience is buffering, but it's not, because we can never recover that point in time to maintain a live linear essence emission. All right, so there we go. So on the right-hand side, this shows the number of packets per second that the demodulator is essentially providing into the MMT transport for on the receiver. And so those small little glitches, the macro blocking, the pausing, like the, in the smallest quantization is a representation that there is no transport data at that point in time, but we can recover almost instantaneously from that with MMT. Right, so even longer periods of dropout, because once we have our anchor clock point in time and we can compute the differential of what the data unit loss is in between. So even if we have lost, for instance, PTS clock timing data representation in between in the essence emission, we can still synthesize and recover that appropriately. Even if we've lost intermediate samples that are P or B frames, we can still push up as much from the depacketization layer to the decoder, and its error concealment and robustness will continue to render. Now, of course, with a reference iframe, it can be tricky, but it's pretty good, especially on Qualcomm on their hardware stack and devices. So, if we could just play that once more, I just want to walk through it again. As we look at this graph, there's small little impediments here, right? And so you'll see a macro blocking artifact, right, at these impediments, because it's missing something either in a predicted frame or in a B frame in there. But the media essence is still contiguous, it's still linear. It's still something that you can follow through. And because the audio essence emission is substantially smaller, and again, MMT supporting sparse media tracks, we can still maintain context of the media rendition with the visual anomalies and gaps inside of the audio playback and rendition. So, does that kind of make sense a little bit? Like, it kind of looks like what would be maybe a satellite broadcast or a cable emission that maybe have some, you know, some small interference or, you know, rain fade or short signal interruption, where there's a small degree of artifacting and representation, but as soon as that essence emission is available again, it recovers almost instantaneously. Does that kind of make sense? Okay. Now, the next one I'm gonna show is gonna be a little bit trickier. Now, it's not exactly a, you know, apples to oranges comparison, because it is at a different mod cod, but essentially, this is using route dash, and the experience, regardless of the mod cod, that's just a function of how frequently there may be impairments in the emission. But the experience is fundamentally different. So if we could play through this one, please. Now, again, the same thing on the right is the number of packets per second from the demodulator. And this first impairment, you know, affects both of essentially the 16 QAM PLP and the 64 QAM PLP here. Now, but what happens is that in this impairment is that we just have lost 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 seconds of media essence that we will never get back. And because it's only lost a portion of it, and sometimes of the data from the transport layer, again, with route dash, it doesn't matter, because we can't take only a portion. We have to have the completely recovered object, and we have to have the completely recovered objects for the video, audio, and caption essence emission, right? So even transient signal impairments will have a huge impact upon the content rendition and playback. Now, there is one CE device that's in market that handles this differently, but they're not allowed to do that. And the reason I say they're not allowed to do that is because if you attempted to apply that for any other non-hardened HEVC decoder, it will crash the decoder, because now you're delivering a data, essentially a HEVC bitstream with incomplete or incorrect null representation. And if you don't harden the decoder or establish a null reconstruction in the decoder or trigger trigger-specific null poisoning to indicate that this portion of the media essence is invalid to the decoder, it will crash pretty much any mobility hardware-based decoder chipset except for one vendor that I don't want to name, but it's not correct, and it doesn't align with the standard specification, and it doesn't provide the right foundation for a robust and contiguous audience experience with live linear content. So if we could just play this once more, and I'm not trying to over-exacerbate some of these failure scenarios and use cases in here, but I'm trying to provide a good baseline representation of a stable content essence emission, a transient interruption that has a extremely discongruent representation on the content reception for the audience. So a small impact, even in these quarter second or half second gaps in here, result in usually a multi-second pause in the media rendition and content experience. And again, because it's IP multicast from a unidirectional transport, we can't ever recover that point in time. And so consumer experiences are expecting this with OTT to be a rebuffering activity or impact, but that's not how this works. And even with ALFEC on top of it, you still can't recover things that you don't have enough of the repair symbols for. So you're in a very challenging content transport and distribution model by only providing route dash in here, even with transient limitations in the RF reception, or there may be issues on the encoding or scheduler chain where there are essentially super technical, but there may be use cases where the bare capacity of the PLP for that subframe is exceeded on the emission. So the schedulers by default will have to overflow that or lose some data in the emission because it just can't pack, you know, it can't, in 8 bytes of space, it can't put, you know, 10 bytes of data essence emission in there in that temporal window. Sometimes it just doesn't work on the essence, on the encoding, or on the NRT data delivery. And so in the air chain process, something has to give way. So even if this isn't always RF impairment, it may be other service delivery impairment, with route dash, you're still at a significant challenge. Now, route can still be used to deliver NRT data, like for instance, VOD for preposition for episodic, because the capability exists to do something called the carousel emission delivery. Now, what that means is the transmission will repeat this over some period of time in some degree of frequency, usually at some managed bit rate across. Now, this is how the lower level side of the signaling works for route versus MMT, where that signaling information is in band in the transmission, and we can tolerate loss of that. With route, it becomes challenging because we can't really tolerate a loss of the signaling information that's needed to prepare and initialize the dash media essence rendition. The next one I'm going to show is, again, a more impactful representation. Again, at a much higher mod cod, so 256 QAM, the RF is only kind of the catalyst for showing the challenges of the content experience. So this first part here shows an example of the initial service acquisition for route dash. There is a degree of latency because we have to receive a number of individual components between the transmission from the signaling information and the essentially the object that's called essentially the TOI for each one of the video, audio, and captions renditions. Now, the bit rate aggregate over on this emission should be good enough for robust depactization across all the time if it were MMT, but even transient dropouts, the recovery is very, very challenging. And at the higher mod cods where there is a harder fall off the digital cliff, a more robust and more, a more robust emission using MMT would provide a substantially better content experience at higher mod CODs, especially even if it's a fixed device. There are scenarios and cases where in my living room where I may have to move the antenna ever so slightly in Seattle because it is a fairly complex and challenging topographic terrain, but there may be cases where I'll see dropout in route dash emission versus MMT where I'd be able to at least maintain a good portion of that content media essence. Now there's one last differentiator here with MMT that was on one of the earlier slides, but it was cut off, and it's specifically relating to this concept of multi-PLP and service robustness. One of the promises has been is that, you know, we can deliver on multiple PLPs the different media essence rendition that matches the durability and the bearer payload requirements. And so in the radio use case is one scenario, but in some of the RPs and the recommended practices and some of the research is that the potential exists to deliver, for instance, the signaling information that is needed from in ATSC 3 like the LLS or the service level signaling in an ultra robust PLP like QPSK. The audio essence emission in a very robust emission in like 16 QAM and the video essence emission in like 64 or 256 QAM. You can't do that with route dash because the lack of support for sparse media tracks will cause the media essence rendition at some point in time to fail. Now, technically you can configure it, technically you can configure those emissions, you can supply those emissions, but the higher the mod COD, like 64, 256 QAM, again, just the loss of one packet loses that whole group of pictures for video, audio, and captions essence emission. Now, with MMT, where this gets interesting, is we could apply kind of a very similar model, the signaling on a QPSK, the audio essence emission on 16, the video essence as a base layer in 64, and potentially leveraging something like LDM or 256 for a scalable enhancement layer. Now the trick is in this, the potential exists with sparse media tracks and scalable HEVC, is that base layer could be 540p closed GOP, which allows for fast channel change time, faster channel change time than what you get with route dash, very similar to what you'd see in a traditional over-the-air ATSC 1.0 emission for channel change. And by leveraging scalable HEVC on top of it, like in a 1080p rendition and essence emission, when it's done correctly with open GOP, the net aggregate bandwidth is about the same of doing is would be about the same as doing a single 1080p essence emission. But more importantly, is now there's two video essence renditions, one that is closed GOP for fast channel change and works for durable reception over, you know, like a lower order mod COD, but then also essentially a HD 1080p rendition as using scalable in the enhancement layer. And when you combine those all together, now you can actually leverage the use cases of up to four PLPs being decoded at a time on a demodulator in the ATSC 3.0 specification. So super, super technical. I know it probably got a lot into the weeds there, but the long and the short of it is MMT enables robust and reliable live linear content via ATSC 3.0 and IP multicast. Next generation CE, mobile devices, receivers without sacrificing traditional fixed CE experiences. So this can work in the real world, and it can also work in the next iteration of whatever RF is gonna be in the future. But most importantly, robust and reliable live linear content is absolutely achievable using MMT both on fixed and mobility devices. All right, questions?
So I have to apologize if I missed this in the first portion of your presentation, but what is or where is the use case for route dash?
So again, this is from my perspective in context and color. It's not, I don't really think it's anyone else's perspective, but this is my hypothesis, is that, dash for OTT delivery is great, right? But for live linear, it's challenging, even for traditional OTT. For next-gen ATSC 3.0, the best use cases for Route Dash would be pre-positioned, episodic, and also like syndicated content delivery, such that it is available in the device. The overhead tax of if you have to use ALFEC is no longer a temporal constraint, for instance, adding 30 seconds of latency, or having availability of like a pseudo VOD hybrid OTT OTA service. Delivering that media over Route Dash, especially with Carousel, then gives you a much higher degree of confidence that it's going to be available for the receiver, and then the ability to augment it with an IP, essentially IP back channel for recovery or ALFEC. But for live linear content delivery, Route Dash just has fundamental problems that can't be solved in its current implementation, even if you try to use CMAF. CMAF doesn't solve that problem just by decreasing the interim multiplex for each media fragment. It just means that you're delivering chunks that won't be, that if they're missing a single packet, won't be delivered up to the application layer at the end of the day. It doesn't solve the robust depacketization that MMT can provide. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
You mentioned that up to four PLPs can be decoded simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Is there a use example for this?
Yeah, so again, the use case would be is to deliver ultra-robust content for mobility, HD, 1080p content for receivers, and then also a data essence emission, right? For instance, for delivering supplemental NRT content or a broadcast application. When you put all four of those together, the signaling, the audio essence, you know, the base, and then the enhancement video layer, when you combine all those together, and then including like usually the data on a higher bearer, higher mod cod for the capacity use cases, then you can actually have a pretty compelling hybrid, what would traditionally be a hybrid OTT OTA experience, purely delivered in kind of the forward broadcast essence and channel. So the use cases would be, you know, especially for distance learning, interactive education, even for use cases for emergency alerting, where there's a live essence emission and there may be pre-delivered information like maps or PDFs or other graphics that show impact areas or you know, how to stay safe, supplemental content that exists in there, especially with the ability to deliver it ultra robustly, especially in those you know, times of an emergency crisis or situation. You know, traditional cell phone networks on the POPs and the most of the towers only usually have, you know, a 6 to 8 to 12 hour run length on it. So after that period of time, you know, in a sustained you know, emergency, it becomes very hard to reach audiences without having, you know, a larger canvas and swath to use, like we could do with 3.0 for emergency alerting and informing. Likewise, for other larger event-based programs, especially sports, is a very interesting use case. When there's highlights, when there's, you know, game stats, when there's other information that you want to provide supplemental in, for the audience experience, when you combine those four PLP use cases, you can provide those highlights. You can provide like a similar OTT experience using the A344 interactive content runtime on a large screen experience. That's really interesting and compelling. The trick is that how do we help move that forward altogether? That's really the big question in the back of my mind. So,
so in the case where a broadcaster is putting out multiple, I don't know, versions, for lack of a better word on my part, over different PLPs, mm-hmm. are receivers going to have the capability to, say, hop between, say, if it's encountering a lot of errors, mm-hmm. You know, when it's looking at the higher bandwidth modulations, will they have the ability to kind of automatically make a call if it's available to jump down to the more robust physical pipe?
So when the content is structured using Scalable, that's kind of more of a decoder functionality on the bitstream. But there are use cases in both Route Dash and MMT for hybrid OTT OTA delivery where there may be alternative or supplemental renditions that are available via IP backchannel. But again, those have some serious challenges behind them. And so it's not so much that it's switching between the PLPs, it's that the data essence emission that's available from the demodulator in each one of those PLPs are able to be in MMT, are able to be as robustly as decoded based upon the emission characteristics and then robustly rendered to the user without substantive impairment. And again, there's no hard requirement for an IP back channel in 3.0. So the robust depacketization has to be, at least from my perspective, a foundational capability of the media transport layer.
I'm trying to understand how broadcasters with a one transmitter site in 3.0 is going to work for a mobile device versus your cellular transmitter sites are every 3 to 5 miles apart. Mm-hmm. How is 3.0 going to work for mobile devices for one transmitter site that's 45 mm-hmm. miles away or something? I just cannot yep. see this ever working.
So I'd be more than happy to take that offline because I am at time right now, because that is a great question. I don't want to add in a whole bunch more into the mix because this was a huge bite out of the pie just right now, but I'll be more than happy to discuss it one-on-one.
You created an open source free ATSC3 utility. What could we use your software for?
Sure, so just a quick example and use case is everything from those demos that you saw earlier, everything that's on this handset, that's part of the open source library called libATSC3. There's also a number of other tools when it comes to being able to process, inspect, analyze the for instance, the SCLTP emissions, the media essence emission, there's the Wireshark implementation for low-level packet analysis. Now, it doesn't augment or replace some of the great tools like Triveni StreamScope, but it does give you the ability to look at a very, very low level into the essence emission. Now, additionally, one of the things I had worked to help produce and make available at my time at One Media was an open source broadcast application and a A344 interactive content runtime. So for the next iteration of developers, especially ones that are web savvy, the kids out there today who are hacking the new, the next Instagram or the next TikTok or whatever those experiences, they're usually always inside of the web browser, inside of the developer tools. This open source BA gives you the baseline fundamentals of being able to interact in the A344 content runtime environment. Likewise, on a mobile device, the same experience is there. But you can then actually connect in using the same development tools that you would to develop a HTML5 interactive application for desktop or mobile in the same experience here. So it, in addition to it being a full ATSC3 stack from 3.24 and upwards, including A360 and content protection with Widevine and the interactive content runtime environment. The opportunity now exists is to have a virtual air chain, the ability to receive STLTP emissions or playback emissions, and to be able to develop and iterate in real time for interactive content or broadcast applications on pretty much any device. So that's a lot there, but it essentially tries to remove the barriers to entry, especially for people to, or developers, for engineers to be able to actually see what an ATSC 3.0 essence looks like, what a content rendition looks like, and in this use case, what a broadcast application can be, and actually develop along with it from an engineering or software development perspective. So this is an older rendition, but it is an HTML5 application that's all part of a captured file, which is the 3.0 STLTP reference emission. So trying to remove those barriers to entry, so instead of having to have a full air chain, encoder, scheduler, signaler, encoder, packager, signaler, and scheduler, transmitter, demodulator, and then runtime environment, making those all into kind of one small piece. Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.